I don't just want to win in 2024. I want to crush these criminal monsters who are taking our rights and backing Putin and targeting trans kids and minimizing Black people down to their sneakers, because we need to beat these people. Like, we need such a huge coalition, not just the base, but left-leaning independents, Never Trumpers, any sane homeless Republican. We need everyone. And I just think with the Electoral College working against us in the presidential election, the gerrymandering work against us in the House races, the voter suppression working against us everywhere, the Republicans are very good at winning the election. They are absolutely garbage at governing. So we need to be getting good at winning elections so we can actually do the thing we're good at, which is governing. Hello, and welcome to the Politics Girl podcast. I'm your host, Lee McGowan. Let's get into it. Why do Democrats often fail to win voters to their side, even when they have the better ideas and the better candidates? And how do we make sure we don't do that when the very fate of democracy hangs in the balance? These are the types of questions political scientist and strategist Rachel Bitticoffer asked herself when she sat down to write Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. Rachel is a political scientist and election forecaster turned political strategist, whose interviews and analysis have been featured everywhere from the New York Times to the Washington Post to Real Time with Bill Maher. Rachel now works directly with the Democratic Party candidates, and her book is the penultimate handbook for anyone who wants to counter GOP messaging in 2024 and beyond. According to Rachel, the Democrats' carefully constructed rational arguments about positions and policy have often been crushed at the polls because the voters are often swayed by Republicans who are selling fear and anger and resentment instead. That it was only when the Democrats were handed an overwhelmingly motivational issue like the reversal of Roe v. Wade that they found their way to finally start countering this effect. And all I can say is it's about damn time, because we have to win, and this is the way to do it. So without further ado, please welcome my guest, political scientist, election forecaster, and fighter ready to hit a roundhouse for democracy, Rachel Bitticoffer. Welcome, Rachel.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited to be here. Yay!
Oh my gosh. Well, thank you for joining me. You know I love you and I love your work. Ditto. So congratulations on this book.
Yeah, thank you. It's a mission-oriented book, the whole team around it, particularly my erstwhile assistant writer, Aaron Murphy, understood that this book, if we didn't get it written and written well and out in time for 2024, we'd be in some serious hurt. We can't afford to run any bad strategies on that swing map. So that's what this book is all about.
Oh my gosh. Exactly right. That's exactly right. First of all, I just want to tell you that I love that some people are saying this book is tough. Some people are saying this book is mean. And I'm like, yeah, because this is the gloves off world we're playing in right now, right? We've got this lying right-wing media. We've got Fox News. We've got the internet. We've got an entire party literally telling us they're going to take democracy. They're already taking our rights. So what we're dealing with here is an actual existential threat. And we can't be dancing around the edges like this is some normal election. We need to come out swinging.
Yeah, no, I have absolutely no issues with anyone that wants to say that, you know, what I'm doing is mean or whatever, right? Like, here's the truth of the matter. And it's really hard to get people to accept this. And this, it was true in my studies of 1933 Germany as well. People have a hard time accepting that we're in that kind of situation. But I know, and you know, and I think your audience knows, that if we don't win the presidency in 2024, we're going to see concentration camps. We're going to see mass deportations. We're going to see loyalty tests. We're going to see the government purged of all opposition. They already have a big hiring data bank on Project 2025, where they're inviting young conservatives who are willing to be loyal to the party and not the Constitution to apply so they can reseed all these empty positions they're planning on creating. So I have absolutely no problem with doing rhetorical meanness if it's going to keep marginalized members of American community from being rounded up and deported.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, at this point, it's like, what are you going to do? There is a moment where you do have to fight fire with fire. And I'm not saying we need to be little gutter rats, right? Like, it doesn't mean we have to be dirty little vicious people, but it does mean we can't be afraid to get dirty. If that's where the fight is, we have to take it to them. And we're fighting for all the right things. Like you said, we're fighting for people's human rights, and we're fighting for people not going into concentration camps and not being some sort of Christian theocracy. And we're fighting for the government not being completely gutted from what we know it to be. I'm a big believer in our better angels. I'm a big believer in doing the right thing. I'm not out here for lying liars to win, but I don't think that's even what you're suggesting. You're not suggesting, okay, well, they lie, so we lie. That's not what you're suggesting.
Not at all.
You're suggesting, like, we bring the fight to the level that it's at, and we're not afraid to pull, you know, we're not pulling punches.
Yeah, let me walk people through so they understand. I'm not arguing at all that you have to lie, because luckily for us, the Republican Party as it stands today is a walking, talking shit show. I mean, the things that we're telling people they want to do are put out in official campaign materials by the Trump campaign, okay? So it's not like we're lying or making things up, right? So what the point of the book is to get people to understand. As you just said, right, we're liberals, we're kind people, we don't like to do this. That's the point, okay? So if you think about, appreciate the brevity of the mission 2 years back or whenever when this book and strategy started, trying to make liberals understand that no one's like them, okay? No one's like you guys. No one knows who Mike Johnson is. No one knows who, you know, Kevin McCarthy was or Bill Barr or any of these people that, like, you know, as a cast of characters. What drives politics is anything is interest. So you're interested in, I'm interested in college football. I know a ton about college football. I know, like, the names, I know the coaches, I know the teams, I know all kinds of stuff, okay? But I don't like NASCAR at all. And I could not tell you one contemporary NASCAR driver, not the name of one single one, because I've never been interested, so I've never gone and read about it, never watched it on TV. What people in our audiences have to understand is that's how normal people are about politics. Normal people do not read political news, especially now, because, you know, when I was a kid, you could not avoid some exposure to news and current events. Now you can avoid it totally, and many people are. So when you look at, like, why the electorate doesn't respond to stuff, some of it is polarization and hyper-partisanship, which I lay out in the book. But some of it also is just not knowing, right? So why are people freaking out? Well, they don't know, right? And so the imperative of the book, it's not so much tinkling in the trees of the Democratic messaging movement saying we should say freedoms, not freedom, or whatever the hell it is, right? It is saying, no, no, no. The entire plant and the soil it's planted in has to come out by the roots. Your guys are doing it all wrong. We're making campaigns by liberals for liberals, and we need to make campaigns by liberals for everybody else, right? The Republican Party got that, started making this transition in the mid-2000s, really cemented it in 2010, as I go through with my friend Michael Steele on his pod, and he's a blurber on the book, the Fire Pelosi nationalized bus tour that defined the entire 2010 cycle as a referendum on Obama and Pelosi and Obamacare. And that's where Republicans began to realize, oh, actually, it's not so much a story of two different universes when you're trying to win a campaign, where you have a base and you have a swing voter pile, and you treat this base with, like, red meat stuff. We're going to forgive student loans, or we're going to ban gay marriage, or whatever it might be, left or right. And then you have this persuasion pocket where you're trying to win them over on what we call medium voter theorem. So I'm more proximate to your policy needs, which are pretty moderate desires. And I have this great biography, and I, you know, da 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 da, and I'm going to work across the aisle and get shit done. That's how everybody ran until the mid-2000s. But Republicans stopped, and they're like, actually, one message, if it's done well, will both drive strong coalitional turnout. So the base plus independent leaners, which, all, you know, if you read the book, you'll get that better. And what it does in that swing bucket is it's about brand assailing. So they are our candidate is a brand, right? It doesn't matter who they are individually. It can be Jamie Harrison in South Carolina, Joe Biden, you know, for the president. They're going to tie them as a socialist Democrat who's a squad Democrat, who wants to defund the police. They don't give any quarter for Democrats who say, no, that's not my position, right? They just lump sum everybody. And so getting Democrats to learn these rhetorical tricks of how to talk, instead of saying, you know, Joe Biden got money for roads and bridges, you have to tell people Joe Biden fixed the I-95 bridge so it doesn't collapse on your spouse on the way home from work, right? It's an image, it's an emotion, it's a gut conversation. So getting people you know, getting the campaigns and particularly off of the two bucket model, which we did, you know, Michigan and Arizona didn't run the two bucket model and they won in 2022 in Ohio, North Carolina, Wisconsin, and Florida Senate. They all ran the old traditional Democratic model and they all lost. And so it's about getting people, hey, look, there's this thing that I and others are doing, because I'm not alone. There's certain other people implementing a lot of this and it's working. It's already worked. It blunted a midterm effect. My God. I mean, that's almost impossible to do, right? So getting everyone to talk about it, share the book, push their campaigns, especially if they're in one of these critical swing races, to use the strategy, because we really have to make a case. We have to define this 2024 cycle as an existential threat to voters' health, wealth, security, and freedom. And if we do that, we're going to get strong base turnout and we're going to push swing voters away from the Republicans.
Yeah. You make the point that the fundamental issue with the traditional Democratic Party campaign strategy is based on this flawed assumption that people are smarter than that. We're going to talk in deep nuance. We're going to explain our party policy. We're going to say, I understand sometimes it's like this, but here's the gray area that we're working in. And you're basically saying, no, if the Donald Trump election taught us anything, it's that essentially we're not smarter than that, right? So now we need to play into that world. We need to play into the amount of attention span people have. We need to play into what really matters, what jazzes them up, what gets them to the polls. I think that's really a central point, because when people say, like, why do these people keep voting against their own best interest? And you're like, because they don't know they are. Like, they literally don't know they are. Like, it is NASCAR to them, the way it is to you. You know what I mean? Like, they're not paying attention. And I think the average American isn't even aware that it's the legislative branch that can make such a difference in their life. That's why they don't vote in midterms, right? We get mad at the president. We get mad at our governor. We get mad at the mayor because they're the figurehead. So we figure, well, they can fix it. You're like, no, they can sign something that comes across their desk from the legislative branch. But you should be out there at every midterm being like, these are the people that can check the president. These are the people that can make the laws. These are the people that can sign the laws. These are the people we need to be paying attention to. Most people don't know that. We're not smarter than that, right? We need to know a lot more than we do.
Yeah. No, it's exactly right. And here's the thing, is like whenever I said the tree, right? The tree analogy, the soil was that assumption. Okay. The soil is the assumption that liberal consultants, activists, politicos, people listening to this pod, candidates, all of us make, is that everyone's like us, and actually no one's like us. And so when you say Trump taught us that, well, political science taught us 50, 60, 70 years ago now, when we first were able to finally study people, because, you know, we didn't have that technology until survey research came along. They did a seminal study of the American voter. Okay, it's called The American Voter. You can check it out. And what it found was pretty disturbing. Okay, it found out that actually most Americans, beyond knowing who the president is and maybe the party, don't know almost anything else about politics. Okay. So that's why the Republicans came up with their obstruction strategy in 2010, because remember, they were out in the woods. Maybe they're never going to be able to win again because they've led us into Iraq and they also killed the economy into the Great Recession. And oh, they're going to be out in the wilderness forever. 1 year later, they pick up 63 seats in the House. And so, like, when you think about, like, where this odyssey for me, where does it begin? What begins there as a first year grad student, like thinking about, what am I going to study? I'm going to study that. I want to understand how it is this electorate can go within a year, right? Because I didn't buy the conventional, like, diagnosis you'd hear from Nate Silver and Cook at that time, right? Oh, you know, middle-class voters have rejected Obamacare. Yeah, well, they did. I mean, they did reject Obamacare because, you know, we did not defend it. We did not run offensively, not defend it. We didn't tell people Obamacare has just increased the insurance rolls by 30 million people. You know, we should have put little kids with heart disease that have lifetime capped out, right?
On TV, yeah, right? Man.
Never did any of that. So yes, there was backlash to Obamacare. But when you looked at the turnout, especially in that 2010 and 2014 midterm, 35-42% of midterm turnout, which is about 10 points lower than we get in 18 when, you know, the Trump effect kicks in. I'm like, ah, no, there's more going on. It's not just about how these swing voters are voting. It's how that electorate gets shaped and who shows up and bothers to vote. And, you know, getting people to understand Americans are plenty smart when it comes to IQ. We're like every other developed nation on earth, man. We got good calories, good nutrition, and good medical care for people who aren't poor, right? So many, many people are very smart. That Elon Musk is very smart, doesn't understand jack shit about how the government works, okay? He probably could not tell you the legislative process of how a bill becomes a law, right? And that doesn't mean he's dumb, but it does mean he's civically dumb. And we are so civically dumb in this country that political science was like rightly concerned about it. And they're like, oh, don't worry though, because people have this thing they can use to make a cognitive shortcut called partisanship. So they don't really need to know about John Smith, the candidate, as long as they know John Smith's a Democrat or a Republican, they can use that to categorize him and make a political choice that's good for them with very limited information. Okay. Well, if we fast forward 70 years, folks, what we have is a system where partisanship dictates 90% of the vote choice. I mean, I think the Jimmy Kimmel Show just did a series where they were asking people on the stump.
Just so people know, if you haven't seen what Rachel's talking about, Jimmy Kimmel went out into North Carolina and he asked people about specific things that Trump had done, but he said Biden had done them. And they were like, well, obviously it's because he has dementia. Obviously it's because he has this. They had all these reasons why this terrible thing had happened. And then the person who was asking the question was like, oh, I'm so sorry, I screwed up. I said this wrong. Can I just say it again? And they were like, go ahead. She's like, it was Trump that did the blah, blah, blah. And their brains so quickly switched to go, well, you know, it's understandable because, I mean, it felt shocking because the cognitive dissonance was, they could not see that it was the same thing. It's actually a really good thing to go and watch.
It is, and I'm going to be sharing that definitely because, like, here's the thing. When I was in the Wasson Center, I ran a survey and I wanted to see how much partisan cues could shift public sentiment about things. And you can't use guns and abortion because people kind of know that, right? So less obvious policies, you know, that are in the two-party platforms. And what I did is an experimental design where I shifted the party that was proposing the policy. Okay, that's it. Like, so one time it's the Republicans that want to propose this thing. The next voter might hear it's from the Democrats. And what I wanted to see is how much does public opinion shift when the party label shifts among partisans? So Democrats flipping over because it's from the Democrats or the Republicans and vice versa. The effect size was massive. Okay, like, in statistical language, there's not even a word for how strong of an effect size this produced. And so I was really glad Kimmel did that. I'm going to share it around. But if you get a chance to watch it, you're hearing this interview and you're interested in this, you will see, as Lee just described, it's an immediate transition. Immediate. You can literally watch them transition cognitively to conform to, like, Trump good, Biden bad. And so when I mention that, because when you read this book, you're going to understand how much partisanship, even for most independents, dictates voter behavior. And you don't hear that conversation on, like, when they're analyzing the stump and they're out there interviewing people and blah, blah, blah. You don't hear that at all. And it is by far the most powerful predictor of, I don't need to know anything about Lee. I don't need to know she's white, black, young, old, rural, urban, college educated, whatever. You could be a black dot with nothing to indicate, but I get one clue. She's a Democrat or she's an independent that leans Democrat, and I will be able to predict your vote choice a year out from an election with no candidates on the ballot, and I'll almost always be right.
Which is amazing, right? Because it's such a difference and people are not making the right choices for our government, for themselves, for their own well-being. And I think that that's why you and I have both agreed Democrats needed to change their tactic for a long time. We've needed them to meet the moment and not treat it as business as usual. And it feels like they're kind of ready to do that now. You work with the DNC. What's your sense of where they're at? Because it feels a little bit like the reversal of Roe was the thing that kind of allowed them to really acknowledge that the stakes are so obvious and so high. Because I remember going to meetings around the time and people kept telling me this abortion thing is going to go away. And I kept saying, it is not. Like,
no.
And I will tell you, it was a million men that told me this. And I was like, you know, like, we need to get back to talking to Trump voters in, you know, in rural diners. And I thought, no, go to college campuses and talk to women about their actual rights. Yes. Why are you trying to turn some, you know, 45-year-old guy who knows exactly who he is and is going to make his decision based on the fact that he's already MAGA, go to people that aren't voting and say, hey, guess what? Your rights are being taken away. You're going to lose your rights. That's, we're 50% of the population. Yes. Even if not a single man cares about our rights, we're still 50% of the electorate. And look what's happened since. Yeah, yeah. So do you find that the DNC is ready to start like shaking it up?
Oh gosh, yeah. No, I think Jamie Harrison has been the best thing that we could have ever have had happen at the DNC. And
if
he hadn't come
in
and they hadn't adopted these strategies and started transitioning things, we wouldn't be sitting in this position, folks, where we killed the midterms. We've been winning every special election, right? And, you know, I just don't think he gets nearly enough appreciation, because to get people to try new things is very difficult, okay? Especially when the old thing has like a 40, 50% success rate, and you have to get them to understand, yes, when you are out of power, i.e. Trump's in the presidency, that you're going to win even off bad strategy, right? So I just think he deserves a hats off. And, you know, just to be clear, I am training the DNC, all 57 state party committees, because there's territories in Puerto Rico, you know what I mean? I'm training them on this book. They're going to all learn this book. They're getting three copies of it. And that's going to help a lot, right? To nationalize the strategy and get it going everywhere. But you can help too, because the most important thing is to get these swing races in the House and the Senate. The Biden team knows what they're doing. They're on it. They're going to be running very effective strategy. The question for me, as a person who is looking at this as a like a kind of like a game maker, trying not to lose the game. That's all I care about, right? Trying to win the game, right? I don't have any other considerations, right? What I want to see happen to maximize the probability of us winning is to make sure that we take negative partisanship strategy into Ohio, into Montana, into Florida. And we have to win either Florida or Texas, because we're going to lose West Virginia, folks. And that's just a fact, right? So we need a pickup seat. And so it's just time to make sure from the state legislative races, and I layer this out in the book, so you really should read the book. This is a paradigm shifting book where Republicans ran CRT. They made it up. They made it a household name, which is what we're trying to do right now with Project 2025. And if you don't know what that is, you should Google it.
We did a whole episode on Project 2025 at the beginning of the year. So don't Google it. Just go listen to our episode on Project 2025. Also, she's CRT that Rachel's talking about is that critical race theory that was a law school course that was talking about systemic racism in our culture and how it ends up affecting our legislation and our laws and long-term effects on our society. And they turned the word CRT, which was a college level course, into anything that had to do with race. And they were acting like we were teaching it to kindergarten students and we had to get CRT out of everywhere. And it was really a way to just attack DEI initiatives, a way to attack the Black voter, a way to attack Black history. And they used it as a kind of a catch-all. So when Rachel's talking about CRT, that's what she's talking about. But Rachel, before you go on, because you used the word negative partisanship, and I think people don't know what that is. So you advocate for this concept of negative partisanship. So could you tell us what that is and why you advocate for it?
Sure. So as we were talking about partisanship, the be all end all in American politics, okay? There's two parties, we have a unique system, and partisanship is unusually strong in it. We're Democrats for a reason. Like, we love equality, fairness, environment, public education, public infrastructure, good government, right? Effective government. But we have in that identity, because we are in a two-party system and there's a villain, we have negative feelings that are grounded in that positive partisanship towards the people that can keep us from those things, the Republican Party, right? And so, you know, when you think about your opposition, you get fear, threat, right? Hate, maybe, but fear and threat is what motivates it mostly. And so what my theory with forecasting work, back when I first started doing this national stuff, it was for forecasting to kind of bring Nate Silver and those guys up to speed on how much polarization was impacting things, because they were slow to catch that. Getting people to understand, hey, listen, the electorate that existed for the 8 years that Obama was in office is conditioned on low negative partisanship, because Democrats didn't feel threatened because they were in control. But once Trump, any Republican would have caused this, but Trump, right? The threat and fear factor goes, right? And so I was trying to tell people.
Understandably.
Yes. And I was trying to tell people the man's 18, a menace. Because, you know, this comes back to that 2010 cycle when I tried to understand the relationship between coalitional turnout, who votes and who the swing voters vote for, because it's a story of both things. I understood the languished turnout that we saw in 2010 and 2014, the two other Obama midterms, was going to be wiped away, that we were going to see something wholly different in terms of the composition of the electorate. And then when you factor in things like de-alignment and realignment, so you guys might know that non-college whites have moved away from the Democratic coalition over the last 30 years. But what you don't know is that college-educated whites have been moving left, right? And so we have these realignments going on, too, that you have to factor into these predictions. So negative partisanship is about getting people to understand basic human psychology. And folks, we're not special psychological specimens here in the left. So like for a while, people would test things and like, liberals don't like negative stuff. Like, no, dude, liberals are human beings, okay? There's a bell curve of human psychology. And you could say this is like the people who are the most empathetic about outgroups, and these are the people who are not. And we might be over on this tail because we actually give a shit about people who aren't us, our families, or our friends, okay? But we're still on the psychological bell curve of what motivates humans. And threat and fear, loss aversion, is more motivating to people than credit claiming, I gave you this, I'm going to get you that kind of stuff. And it's just a fact that they have used to run against us in swing races, where you look at Ron DeSantis, J.D. Vance, you know, Josh Hawley against Claire McCaskill, they are running extremist Republicans in swing type style races, and they are beating us. And those people are never once putting out ads about bipartisanship and getting stuff done, and I'm going to get you this policy. Their ads are about us, about don't vote for the Democrats. The entire brand is scary. It's socialist. It's going to turn your male children into girls. That's how they've been pounding away at the Latino voter file. And so this book is about getting us to come into symmetric electoral warfare at a time where we can afford not to do anything less, or we're going to lose democracy to these folks.
Okay, so negative partisanship is voting against an opponent, yes, rather than voting for, yes, your candidate, which is a very Republican tactic, yes, to make the other side the big bad, you know? So using it against them makes sense, but we're also not going to have to make things up because they are bad, right? Like, they had to turn us into baby killers, but they actually are fascists.
Yes, and
right?
They actually are going to ban abortion nationwide. They are going to.
Right,
do that.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so I get that. Okay, so you're basically arguing that the way to win an electoral war in this version of an extremely polarized America, yes, is to use a message that not only drives our coalition to turn out because we believe in all these great things, right, but it also pushes swing voters away from the Republican Party because they really are scary and bad and frightening.
And you can see that strategy in real life in the Michigan race, all three of them, Michigan Democratic Party, you know, just, it's so good.
I know. And God, then, it's like it, like, ugh.
But the reason why is because those women lean right into, you know what I mean? Like, they get this intrinsically, and they all ran on it, blah, 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 right? So you guys can see, like, how Ro-Repeal messaging, the Kentucky ad at Andy Beshear's race, does this, okay? So, like, it's the young girl that got raped, and she's, like, she's so quintessential Kentucky girl, too. Like, oh, this thing happened to me, and if this Republican abortion regime was in place, I would have been forced to bear my rapist baby. That is one ad that's doing, it's getting out of the buckets, okay? It's one message that binds them all. It's driving us to the polls because we're like, holy shit, I don't want my daughter to go through that. But it's also pushing swing voters to show up to vote for Democrats and not for Republicans as well, because it's telling them the most important thing we have to convey to normal people who don't know anything that we know. They don't know any of Trump's crazy stuff, except for they know about me. You know, he did something at the Capitol. Like, we have to make sure that people hear a simple message. Republicans, ban abortion, coming for you, okay? Because many people right now living in these states, they don't even know that. They don't know that it was a Republican policy that banned abortion. Some of them even blame Joe Biden, frankly. They do. Yeah. Well, Joe Biden's president. Isn't that what happened? Okay. So like our job then becomes very strategically different, right? If you think about the old model, it's about trying to convince people on the finer points of I'm better and this and that. And then, you know, if you accept the electorate is know nothing and we have to freak it out or we're all going to die, the strategic objective is totally different. It's about just make sure people connect MAGA, Republican, extreme threat to you, right? It becomes about that, getting that across, and then it becomes a doable mission as well.
Yeah. So we just keep pointing out the danger that they pose to us, which, as we've said, is true. They are extremists. They are an existential threat to our health, to the economy, to our safety, to our freedom. And we just keep beating that drum. Like, there are women dying of treatable pregnancy complications because of Republicans. There are IVF clinics closing because the IVF in those states is just not legally sound anymore. The Speaker of the House does have a Christian nationalist flag flying outside his office, and he does think that gay people should be imprisoned. We're not lying. No. We're just pointing out informing. The dangers. We're saying, don't jump into that pit of vipers because they're gonna kill you. If I asked you how many subscriptions you have right now, would you be able to tell me? How about how much they cost? Most people think they could, and most people are wrong. In fact, 75% of people have subscriptions they've completely forgotten about. 75%. It's amazing how much money these companies are making off of us, and we don't even know. That's why Rocket Money is so helpful. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. It shows you all your subscriptions in one place, and if there's something you don't want or can no longer afford, Rocket Money can help you cancel with a few taps. Rocket Money will even try to negotiate for you to get a refund for the last couple of months of wasted money and negotiate to lower your bills by 20%. All you have to do is take a picture of your bill and Rocket Money does the rest. It's a terrific service, which is probably why Rocket Money has over 5 million users, has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, and saved its members up to $740 a year when using all the app's features. So stop wasting money on things you don't use and cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/politicsgirl. That's rocketmoney.com/politicsgirl. rocketmoney.com/politicsgirl. Did you know your temperature at night has one of the greatest impacts on your quality of sleep? If you're one of those people who wakes up too hot or too cold, then I highly recommend you check out Miracle Made bed sheets. Inspired by NASA, Miracle Made uses silver-infused fabrics to make temperature-regulating bedding so you can sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. Miracle Made silver-infused sheets are not only thermoregulating, but also prevent up to 99.7% of bacterial growth, leaving them to stay cleaner and fresher 3 times longer than other sheets. Plus, they're just really nice. Great high-quality bedding without the obscenely high price. Go see for yourself. Go to trymiracle.com/politicsgirl to try Miracle Made sheets today. And whether you're buying them for yourself or as a gift for a loved one, if you order today, you can save over 40%. And if you use our promo code politicsgirl at checkout, you will get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. Miracle is so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you aren't 100% satisfied, you will get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep today with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/politicsgirl and use the code politicsgirl to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/politicsgirl to treat yourself. As I said a couple weeks ago, Politics Girl is now sponsored by Sundays for Dogs, and boy, does Chips love it. If you haven't heard me gush about my golden doodle before, here I go. You guys, I'm obsessed with this dog. He's my shadow. He goes with me everywhere, and I'm not kidding when I tell you that he is loving Sundays for Dogs. I had heard nothing but great things about Sundays, but my boy's a picky eater, so I wasn't sure. But he's crazy about it. In fact, I'm currently waiting for my new order because it's all gone and it's all he wants to eat. In fact, he boldly rejected his old food the entire first day we were out of it. Sundays for Dogs is a fresh dog food made from a short list of human-grade ingredients. It was co-founded by a practicing veterinarian who tests and formulates every version of each recipe. Sundaes contains 90% meat, 10% superfoods, and 0% synthetic nutrients or artificial ingredients. And unlike other fresh dog foods, Sundaes doesn't require refrigeration or preparation because of their air drying process. So you can just pour and serve. It's been so easy. Chips likes the beef, he likes the chicken. I love that we changed his food and what we pick up on walks didn't change, if you know what I'm saying. It's all amazing. So if you and your dog want to try, go to sundaesfordogs.com/politicsgirl to get 40% off your first order. That's sundaesfordogs.com/politicsgirl or use the code politicsgirl at checkout for 40% off. Because I'm sure your dog is just as special to you as my dog is to me. And don't these doggos just deserve the best? sundaesfordogs.com/politicsgirl. The Politics Girl podcast has a new sponsor, Factor. Factor is a fresh, never frozen, chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, ready-to-eat meal in just 2 minutes. Now, I have been writing my book, and you guys are the first people I'm telling, but I have been working 15 hours a day. And the other day I went to my kitchen and I thought, oh my God, I haven't gone to the grocery store. I have nothing here to eat. And then I opened my fridge and I remembered that I had Factor delivery. This is not your average prepared meal. These are restaurant quality dishes that are ready to heat whenever you're ready to eat. There's no prep. There's no shopping. There's no thinking. They have over 35 different options to choose from every week. They also have calorie smart plans, protein plus plans, and a keto plan. Plus more than 60 add-ons like breakfast and midday bites to get you fueled and feeling good. Factor is literally the perfect solution if you're looking for a fast, premium quality option with no cooking required. I cannot tell you how relieved I was to find these in my fridge the other day. I was so grateful and the chicken was delicious, like a normal person's chicken that you would cook in your own kitchen. So give it a try for yourself. Head to factormeals.com/politicsgirl50 and use the code politicsgirl50 to get 50% off. That's code politicsgirl50 at factormeals.com/politicsgirl50 to get 50% off. Factor Meals, dietitian approved, and as my grandmother would say, delicious, nutritious. We're not lying. We're just pointing out the dangers. We're saying, don't jump into that pit of vipers because they're going to kill you.
Yes. And you know, in the second half of the book is where all the practical advice, because first I got to break the wheel and explain why, okay? Why you got to stop doing what you want to do and what you think it works. It doesn't work and you got to stop doing it. And the reason why is in the front half of the book, but the back half explains the importance of some things, okay? Number one, if you want people to be angry at Republicans, average normal people, you have to name the villain every time. And you can't obfuscate it. Like, can't say it's big oil or pharma or NRA letting our kids get slaughtered at school. You have to name the villain. Why don't we have gun action? We don't have it because Republicans won't vote for it, okay? So we need to make sure the public's angst at gun failure, the failure to save us from guns, gets aimed directly at the people with the power to change the problem. And it can be a redundant feeling. So, you know, saying something like MAGA extremist David Schweikart, it's wordy. Okay, and I'm a succinct person. In fact, I like to think I'm probably one of the best people in the world taking 10 words and turning it into three. Okay? But you got to say it, even though it's a mouthful. MAGA extremist Mike Johnson, Republican extremist, right? Extreme Republicans, radical Republicans. We're branding when we do that. And with repetition, right? If we all started doing that, creates a cacophony. And you've seen this out of great leaders like Hakeem Jeffries and Joe Biden saying MAGA extremist, right? But we need all of us doing it all of the time. When you construct a tweet, you should read it and try to read it as somebody who, pretend you don't know anything. Pretend you're a normal person, in other words, because you don't know anything. And would you get the message? People don't just magically know you're talking about Republicans when you say Congress won't make gun legislation. We think that they know that because we know that, because we have all this information. And therefore is why we're in a position where our policies are polling at 80, 90%. And yet people are going into ballot boxes and they're splitting their tickets. Like I go through Florida and other places where they had minimum wage and pro-pot ballot things, but pick up, you know, those past 65%. And then 15 of that 65 went to Ron DeSantis. You can run on policy, just not like that, right? You have to do it, where you're making sure Democrats support minimum wage, Republicans don't, okay? Democrats got you $35 insulin, all the Republicans voted no. Democrats passed the Inflation Reduction Act, and all the Republicans voted no, right? So it was about more intentionality in how we communicate.
I think that they got that a little bit with the border, that we had negotiated an entire deal with Republicans. And they were like, the border's the number one concern. We're not going to Ukraine. We're not helping Israel. We're not doing anything until we do the border. And they were like, great, here's a border deal. And they were like, and they didn't vote for it because they need it for the election and because their boy told them not to. And I think some people are starting to get that. They're like, why aren't we fixing it? You're like, because the Republicans won't sign the bill. Like, you keep coming back to it. Because I think, until recently, we both agreed that the Democrats were really bad at messaging, that the Republicans would come at you and say, you have to vote because the fate of the world is at hand. These evil lib baby killers are going to take your future. And the Democrats would be like, here's our giant policy brief filled with nuance that really addresses the issues that you want. And was like, we're done. That's the argument. The Republicans are great at targeting voters with their fear and their hate and their nerves about where the future is going to be. And we don't know. So I would rather hang on to what I know from the past. But they're also great at targeting their opponents' voters with apathy, encouraging third party votes, encouraging voters to stay home, telling people their votes won't count, flooding the zone with polls that say that Trump and Biden are neck and neck, or Trump is beating Biden, you know, just to make people feel defeatist. You know, I know that it's the right that's pushing hard on Gaza right now because they're trying to make the left flank of the Democratic Party hate Joe Biden. That's where the Genocide Joe thing came from. It came from the right pitching the left, and we keep falling into that trap. I keep saying about the left thing because these are all legitimate issues, and I love Democrats because we care about people. We care about the world. We care about the people in Gaza. We care about what happened to the people in Israel. But like, Trump would literally allow Netanyahu to nuke Palestine, yes, if he wanted
to. And put
a
Trump tower up. So this idea, right in the middle of Gaza Strip.
Right, dude, in the middle of it. the idea that the alternative is somehow better for the people of Gaza, right, is astounding to me. So that is messaging that's been done by the Republicans, right, against our own voters. And we need to start at least blocking that, yes, at the very least.
Yeah. Stop internalizing shit that comes from the Republican Party. So like in 2016, I'd be like, yeah, you know, and they'd be like, I hated Hillary. And I'm like, yeah, really? Why? You know? And they're like, I don't know. It's just, and I'm like, dude, that is not an accident. Okay. You were designed by their ecosystem to hate Hillary Clinton. And they're doing the same thing with Kamala Harris. And it's amazing to watch people in our side like kind of regurgitate the claim that she's not ready for prime time. She's unqualified. She's gaffe-proof. She's, you know, weak or whatever. She's a vice president. They're always invisible, dude. They're always invisible unless it's Dick Cheney lying us into a war, okay? When you do see the vice president, it's never good, okay? So like, yet it's not that they did that. It's that we internalize it and start to repeat it. And I had journalists calling me to quote, ask me about my opinion. I'd be like, dude, here's my opinion. And I'd tell them what I just told you. And I'm like, I would caution people when you are developing dark attitudes towards your own side, one, to question where it comes from. And if you don't believe me, read the book, because I'm going to show you how CRT is something I had never heard of in January 2021. I had never heard of. Okay. And yet it became the focal issue. It popped up on polls. Every Republican in Virginia in 2021 ran on it, from the state legislative up to the governor and the AG and the lieutenant gov. And they made it the center, something no one had ever heard of, a central theme. And the reason, guys, it worked is because we played ball, dude. I'm not a conspiracy person because I'm an expert in human behavior. And I can tell you how hard it is for humans to coordinate even within one bureaucracy, like trying to do things, right? Like, let alone evil conspiracies that involve the entire DOJ and the FBI and all this shit, right? But there is, to some degree, Republican strategists have successfully developed and deployed strategies that rely on our reactions, our predictable reactions. And so we have to learn how to break that cycle and not give them easy things.
Yeah, I often say when people bring up things like CRT, don't get into the conversation at all. Like, they're like, well, I don't like CRT. You're like, what's CRT? They're like, I don't know. You're like, okay, well, then let's move on. You're like, you know what I do like? This. Like, I don't think we need to be having, you know, like, you're like, CRT actually doesn't affect us right now. What does affect us is unemployment. You know what I mean? And like, don't engage. Like, don't drop into that zone because we're not having that conversation in good faith anyway.
No, exactly.
It was never,
right.
You could, like,
right. Yeah.
Never. It's never started from a place of good faith.
And we keep going in to have these good faith conversations in places like Meet the Press and Face the Nation, where the other side goes in there to set a narrative and to get talking points deployed, right? So we have to resist the urge. I say this to the candidates and politicians that read the book. I said, look, I know why you ran for office. I know you care about good policy and people, right? But I'm here to tell you, we got to separate that from electioneering, because governing is not electioneering. And here's the thing. If you do electioneering well, if you do that with the sole purpose of maximizing the probability of winning and nothing else, right? If you do that, you get political power. And then you can represent people the way that they most deserve to be represented, which is with policy, right? So like, yes, all of our candidates have their own niche shit that they want to focus on, and they have their own brand, whatever. Republicans understand, Glenn Youngkin doesn't give a shit about race in school. He's a business conservative, dude. If he was us, his campaign would have been about low taxes and this and that in Virginia and the economy, right? But he put all that away and aside because some strategist like me on the other side, you know, the evil side, said, look, this is an issue that taps into white grievance. And as you pointed out, people don't know what it is, but it doesn't matter because it becomes what they fear the most. That's why fascism being nebulous, all these things, people say, we can't talk about that because people don't know what it is. Good. We want people to not know what it is because they fill in the blanks with it, right? And so, you know, you get people turning CRT into whatever custom fear factor they have. And they all ran on it and made it the most important issue. They never cared about the issue, but they knew they could win on it, guys. And here, what I'm telling people is wedge row everywhere, wedge it across the entire voter file. Latinos hate it, the Dobbs repeal. Everyone hates it, right? Men, women, everyone, tell them the government, big government Republicans have control over their body, and the only way to get it back is to vote for Democrats. And you can use your power to work on the environment or climate change.
But you have to win.
You have to win first. If you do not win, that's exactly right.
Right. Yeah. And I think it's good because you're also talking about Democrats positioning themselves as the champions of health, of wealth, of safety, of reason, the exact opposite of the extremist positions of the right. Like, we're the party of freedom and common sense, and they've lost their minds.
Yes.
You know, I feel like that's such an easy dichotomy.
I know it sounds like such a given, like, because, you know, in our world, it is a given, but it is not a given out there. It's not a given when you go out into normal world. Unless you live in DC and New York and you don't live in a normal world, okay? Talking about the rest of America, on, you know, out of the beltway, you're not going to see that people are doing what we're doing at night, laying there going, Jesus Christ, I mean, what's going to happen? Like, oh my God, you know, they aren't even aware that there's a problem, okay? So we have to make sure that they go into the ballot booth at least aware that there's a problem, and that we're talking about $500 million expenditure in total, you know, in paid advertising, plus whatever we can gin up in earned media commentary, narrative setting, right? So that's why it takes all of us working as a team, pounding that theme from the bottom of the ticket up to the presidency.
So that's how you see the Democrats winning in 2024.
Yes,
because I have to be honest, I don't just want to win in 2024. I want to crush these criminal monsters who are taking our rights and backing Putin and targeting trans kids and minimizing Black people down to their sneakers, because we need to beat these people. Like, we need such a huge coalition, not just the base, but left-leaning independents, never Trumpers, any sane homeless Republican. We need everyone. And I just think with the Electoral College working against us in the presidential election, the gerrymandering work against us in the House races, the voter suppression working against us everywhere, the Republicans are very good at winning the election. They are absolutely garbage at governing. So we need to be getting good at winning elections so we can actually do the thing we're good at, which is governing. And if we can do both, I think we are absolutely set.
We are. I mean, it's not. So here's the thing I want people to understand, though. And this is why I was like, you know, I knew Biden was going to win in 2020, but the polls, like the big margins, I was like, yeah, that's never going to happen, dude. We're going to make a case to the American public. It's going to be a case that's mostly aired in swing states, folks. So if you're not in a swing district or a swing state, you're not going to see a lot of this. But it's going to be pounded down in those electoral college map states. And it's going to make it very clear that the Republican Party is an extremist threat to democracy, the rule of law, women's control of their bodies, right?
And it is.
And it is.
To be clear, it is not a CRT issue.
Yeah, it's real.
It is. Right?
But
a real existential threat.
After we make that point, half of America is going to vote for fascism. Okay. We have to accept that. Like, that is going to happen. And here's the thing where it's going to hurt us the most. Like, this time around, the House map is easy and the Senate map is hard. 22 is the opposite. Okay. People don't realize blunting the House to a 5-seat majority was a major fucking achievement because they could have had 40 seats. Okay. And then the Senate map was good for us. I mean, could have been better because if we would have run negative partisanship strategy, we would have had Ohio, Wisconsin, North Carolina, and Florida, folks. And if we would have had all four, what could we have done? Right? We could have done the voting
voter protections, protecting Roe. We can suspend the filibuster.
That's why we can't leave Senate races on the map. And we particularly cannot do it this cycle, folks, because we hope the fever is going to break if we pound them again electorally, that finally it's going to fracture this cult apart to the sane part, which is small now, to the crazy part, and you know, whatever comes from that. But we can't be sure. And if we're not, if we don't, if nothing changes, and Mitch McConnell or whoever, it won't even be him probably, it's gonna be some crazy Josh Hawley type, runs the Senate, they're not going to confirm any Biden judges, let alone the Supreme Court. I'm not, if a vacancy came there, okay? They aren't going to confirm a single federal judge onto that bench. I promise you, because they have control of the process. There's no workaround. If they choose not to put these people up for confirmation hearings, there's nothing we can do. So we have to run a perfect map. We have to hold the Senate. And I would like to see we put the wildfire out here and keep it from instituting autocracy. But there's climate change, right? And if we take this strategy, this is a strategy that runs in a swing district or the deepest red places because it's about branding and owning the brand, right? If we start doing this work and we can put out the wildfire, we might be able to deal with our Democratic climate change and gain more and more seats and get back to workable majorities for Democrats so we can get stuff done.
And to be very clear to people, this does not mean that we don't have a working two-party system in America. People need to remember that, like, the Democrats themselves go from Joe Manchin all the way to, like, Nina Turner. Yes. This is a working parliamentary system under the Democratic umbrella. Yes. We have multiple parties in the Democratic Party, and we are working as a coalition together. Pro-coal
right.
and pro-Green New Deal yes. people would not be in the same party in any other
exactly.
country except America. So we need to remember we already have multiple parties in America. They're just all under the Democratic umbrella. Whatever the Republicans are not an American party. And we need to remember that because they are not a pro-democracy party. They're not working within the system. They don't care about the Republic. They don't care about your vote. That's why they will vote against voter protections every time, even though they're telling you the election has been stolen. So you need to say that if you're voting for Democrats, you're not voting for Democrats. You're voting for little d democracy working in America to get the things that we actually want. And this tactic that you're talking about, the way that you're being with the Democratic Party and with our candidates, we can also do this at our own dining room tables with our family and friends, right? Less swaying people over to our side with nuance and more warning them of the danger of allowing the other side to win, which honestly is a lot easier for us because they're doing so many terrible things and we just need to keep pointing it out so people start seeing it.
Exactly. I mean, that's like every single person's an influencer, okay? Whether you have 160,000 or 100, those people matter. Your contact, your ability to influence, especially people you know, is really, really big. So to me, it's about peer-to-peer conversations, making sure, especially the tuned out people that you know that I talk about in the book who are like sometimes proud that they don't do politics, right? They're like, no, I don't do that, right? They don't know. They don't know what's coming. They don't know what's ready came. Bring them up to speed. Let them know about the women that are sitting in Texas hospital parking lots waiting to die. Imagine sitting there with an ecotopic pregnancy knowing it could blow up and kill you at any minute. Like, I can't even, I just can't. I've been pregnant twice and I got to tell you, I just can't imagine going through that. So we need to make it human. Don't worry about facts and figures and statistics, you know, 200.
No one cares about that victims. Anyway.
No, all that shit's going to go over their head. Make it personal. That's what they do, right? They use one girl that was jogging in Georgia killed by an illegal, right? They don't give a shit about all the other children they killed, which is why when they ever time they want to talk about CRT or anything about public education, we should be pivoting and attacking. Protect kids. You want to talk about protecting children? All right, good. Let's have that conversation. And then you hit them for guns, right? They're letting our children get slaughtered in school. They should never be able to say the word protect kids without getting attacked for letting our children die in school. So if we do these things, we're going to see a lot of payback. And my dogs agree, obviously. Yeah,
they do, obviously. And listen, here's the thing. I always say the word freedom shouldn't pass your lips if you're the ones telling us who to love, who to marry, what to teach, what we can read, what we can wear, how we can dress. Like, don't talk to me about freedom when you don't give a shit about our freedom.
And just there, honestly, you did such great branding work, Lee. I mean, that's perfect right there. So great. You're such a natural. I want to tell your audience
I love it. Well, you know me. I love it. I'm into it. This is my NASCAR.
The very first time I ever saw her, I was like, that woman, I love her. So you're so great at getting across to people. And I just am so grateful for your work.
Oh, thank you, Rachel. I'm so grateful for your work too. I mean, thank you for coming today. Thank you for getting us fired up. Tell people how they can follow your work. And most importantly right now, how they can buy that book.
Go read this book. This is a book that will change your mind about a lot of things and make you smarter than Nate Silver. So there you go. And it's called Hit 'Em Where It Hurts, How to Save Democracy by Beating Republicans at Their Own Game. I did record the audio book, so you can hear my smiley, snarky voice all the way through, but you can also buy it in any other form from any bookstore of your choice.
Oh, thank you. They won't be disappointed. It really lays out the truth of what's happening and what we need to do in the clearest terms possible. So onward, once more into the breach.
Thanks, Lee.
Thank you, Rachel. So that was Rachel Bitticoffer, reminding us that with this much on the line, we don't need to sell people. We need to scare them. We need to keep hammering home what the Republicans are doing, how extreme they are, what they will take from all of us if we give them even a lick of power. People need to feel it in their gut. There is no room for nuance in winning. There's lots of room for nuance in governing, but we don't get to govern if we don't win. I want to thank Rachel for joining us today and you for caring enough about democracy to be here. Now go buy Hit 'Em Where It Hurts. It's time to take those gloves off. Until next week, PG out. The Politics Girl podcast is written and performed by me, Lee McGowan, in partnership with the Midas Media Network, and produced and edited by Happy Warrior Entertainment. All rights reserved.